Blog Talk Radio.
There is a candor in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold.
You're listening to Step Into the Light with Patty Sheen.
Who brings a fire, ignites a candle, and makes his own.
This is the show where Christians share their walk from darkness down a sometimes long and lonely path to the light of healing and fulfillment through faith.
Seek out the hopeless, confused and torn, and hold out your candle for all to see. Take your candle and go light your way.
Right here on Blog Talk Radio. Good morning and welcome to this 19th episode of Step Into the Light on this Tuesday morning, January 19th. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Patty Sheen. On this show, we talk about the shadows that creep across the paths of our lives at one time or another in the form of difficult circumstances such as abuse, divorce, addiction, fear, debt, heartbreak, guilt, loss of a loved one, and rejection. Conversely, my guests shed light on those dark times with messages of hope, healing, success, perseverance, faith, and love. In case you tuned into the show and are unable to listen for the entire hour this morning, I would like to let you know where you can find us again. I have a website, and it is Patty Sheen, PattiSheene.com. And on that website, on the very front page, in fact, you will find a link to the show. Just click on the name of my guest. And also, if a week goes by and we have another show up there, I have a Blog Talk Radio tab with a page that says Archive Step Into the Light Shows. And you can go to that page and you will find every show that we have broadcast. You'll also find shows from the previous Blog Talk Radio show that I used to air, known as Literally Speaking. Got some really good shows on both, so we invite you to check them out. I also have a Step Into the Light Facebook page. That's all you need to type into the search bar, to Step Into the Light, and you'll come up with that. And I'd love to have you come over and like that page. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Patty Sheen. I always follow back, but sometimes it takes me a little bit of time. I'm pretty well behind with all of my follows right now, but I'll get caught up. I also have a Pinterest page under Patty Sheen, and on that page I put pictures of my guest and pictures of their books or whatever. So come on over and visit. Well, each week I try to remember a moment in my life that was a special moment. And today I'm going to talk about my granddaughter came over the other evening, and we have a piano sitting right here next to me that I have had since, oh my goodness, I want to say probably the 1970s. And my daughter and my son and I all took piano lessons from the same teacher for a number of years. Both of my kids did really well with the piano. I did not do as well. I'm one of those players who has to have every single note right in front of me. I don't have the ear for music that they do. But anyway, no one had played this piano for years. And the other night, actually, we were back here doing something on the computer, and my daughter started looking for the piano bench, and I'm asking her, "What are you looking for?" She said, "I want to play for release." Well, she found Moonlight Sonata first, and she played a page or so of that, and then she did find For Release, and she played that. She played some other music, and it was just so fun to listen to her play again. It had been such a long time, and I'm jealous because I could not sit down and play like that. If I get some sheet music, which I'd like to do one of these days, it will take me probably days to figure out one song because it's been such a long time. I wanted to let folks know this morning, too, I have a slight cold. I hope I'm not coughing and sneezing in your ear. I'm going to try my best not to do that. Well, now it is time to introduce our guest. Author Christy Brunke holds a degree in English and writing and has experience as a music and drama teacher. Speaking of piano and music, we'll talk about that. Christy writes about adoption stories, parenting, and pro-life events on her blog, where she also posts author interviews and book reviews. Despite her responsibilities as a mom of a 2-year-old and a newborn, Christy completed her novel, Snow Out of Season, which addresses such emotionally charged topics as sudden infant death syndrome, crisis pregnancy, pro-life versus pro-choice, marriage, and faith. If any of these topics interest you, stay right here at Step Into the Light with Patty Sheen on Blog Talk Radio as I welcome Christy to the show. Good morning, Christy.
Good morning, Patty. It's great to be here.
Well, it's such a pleasure to have you this morning. I met Christy at the Greater Philadelphia Christian Writers Conference, and that's how I learned about her book. And I was thrilled that she wanted to come on the show. And it's been quite a while since we were back there, way back last August.
But, yeah, it's been a while. It was a great conference, though.
Yes, it was. I'm so glad that it worked out for us. Christy, you wanted to write like many of us did since you were a fairly young person, but it took you a while before that dream was actually realized. Can you tell us what got in the way?
Well, I was always an avid reader. I loved reading novels and even some nonfiction books, you know, from when I was little. My mom was a big reader, too. So it was always kind of in the back of my head. And I even, when I was in middle school, I submitted a contest for a short story contest. I mean, not story, a short story for a contest at school in the middle school when I was in sixth grade. And I got to win, and I won a Butterball turkey, of all things, because it was around Thanksgiving time. So that was my first writing award, was a Butterball turkey from Arlington Baptist School. my mom, you know, when we were used to read these novels all the time, she was kind of like, hey, maybe you could write a novel one day. So it's kind of always in the back of my head, but, you know, Other things got in the way. High school, I was in a lot of theater, musicals, dramas. And then I went to college and was in a lot of Christian groups and, you know, went on some mission trips. And then after college, God called me to China for a few years. And then I was a music and drama teacher. And then he called me to Alpha Chicago to help with the church out there, and got married and was just very involved in youth ministry and, you know, working at the church and worship team and all kinds of things. So there was just a lot going on. You know, God has basically called me
so.
A lot of other adventures first. So, but writing was always there. And I think the interesting thing is that he's going to use a lot of these experiences I've had in China and, you know, teaching drama and all these different things in my books that I have, not just this book that I already wrote, but future books that I'm planning and other stories
sure.
I plan to tell.
Well, Christy, excuse me, I told you I was hoping I wouldn't cough. I noticed on your website, and you just mentioned it here, that you did live in China for a while. Tell us about that experience. How old were you at that time? Were you young 20s? Or?
Yeah.
I know you're still pretty young.
I just finished my... I was 22. I just gotten out of college, and I had gone on 2 short-term trips. We kind of learned some Chinese, not really much, but just like had a few classes, and it was like a cultural exchange kind of trip. And then after college, I went back. I taught English the first year at a university, and I was going to do that for a few years, but I ended up deciding I really wanted to learn Mandarin, which I was kind of doing on the side while I was teaching anyway. So the second year I studied Mandarin, I was thinking about staying a third year, but then God called me to seminary. I wanted to learn more about the Bible and things like that. And so I went there, and then my mom's like, hey, you should come home. You know, you've been in China 2 years. You've been in North Carolina at school for a year. Why don't you come home? So I did, and I taught music and drama and stuff. But then the interesting thing was when I moved out to Chicago to work at New Life Community Church, I ended up leading. I worked part-time for an internship program, was one of my jobs. And it was, the church now has 20-some locations, but basically I worked on the internship staff, and so there was interns from a lot of the different locations, and every year I ended up taking them to China 4 years in a row, and some of them went back, one of them went back for 2 years, and another for 3 years. So I think,
Wow. You
know, and then we ended up working at a Chinese church. My husband and I, he became the pastor of a youth and children's pastor at a Chinese church, so for 6 years almost. So God's definitely, even though I left China, I've still been back, you know, 4 times for other trips that I led there. And then another time I went back just to visit friends and take, you know, one of my good friends from here. She wanted to climb the Great Wall and things like that. So,
oh my.
So yeah.
My son and daughter-in-law went over there in 2009. Do you remember the total eclipse of the sun was going to occur at that time, and the Orient was the only place you could see it. And they went over and they did all kinds of cool things. In fact, from then on, my son, who was raised in this little tiny town out here in Colorado and was not a traveler, decided, wow, traveling is for me. And he and his wife moved to the UK, and they have been there ever since because they wanted to see Europe, and they figured it was easier to see it by living there than
when you live there,
taking a vacation, you know, once every 2 years or so to go over there for 2 weeks. So they live there now, and so for the little small town kid became became a world
traveler. Fabulous. So then I guess they travel to different countries each. I mean, the countries are so close together, they can travel there every weekend, I guess, if they wanted to.
They've been to several different places, and I guess they have this frequent flyer card. Just, I'll see on Facebook, of all places, spent the weekend in Mexico or whatever. Okay.
Oh, nice.
So
that's great.
I wanted to ask you, Christy, what is it like practicing the Christian faith in China?
Well, some people say there's actually more Christians in China than anywhere else in the world. I mean, they do have, I don't know what the current number, it used to be 1.3 billion. Is that
a whole lot
anyway,
of people?
I'm not sure exactly. Yeah. I heard at one time they had more Christians anywhere else, but it's hard to tell because a lot of them are in underground churches. So they're not necessarily...
Yeah.
Reported, you know, they have the Three Self Church, which is the state church, and you know there are, you know, true godly Christians who go to those churches, but you have to have your sermons pre-approved, or at least you did when I lived there. I'm not sure what the current rules are, but yeah, you have to have your sermons approved, and you couldn't preach on certain things like the second coming of Christ, and you weren't really supposed to evangelize outside the church and stuff like that. So a lot of people were part of house churches, and, you know, the issue there is, you know, a lot of them are on fire and it's wonderful, but there are some house churches that struggle with heresy because they're just not getting that doctrine taught them from, you know, people who've gone to school and studied theology well. So, So, you know, some people are trying to teach them either by, you know, coming back, studying, you know, abroad and then going back there and teaching, or, you know, Americans going over there and trying to teach the house church leaders. So, but it's all kind of, you know, hush-hush because
exactly.
You don't want to get,
yeah.
you know, people in trouble. So it's kind of a fine balance between trying to, you know, minister to people. Some teachers come and they don't, you know, work with the house churches at all. They're just trying to share the gospel with their students and teach them the best they can. And others, you know, have a different purpose. So there's, I don't want to say too much, but just, you know, it just depends on what your goal is and what organization you go with, what your focus is going to be and how you're going to reach out and minister to people in God's name. It might be, you know, helping in an orphanage, or it might be, you know, teaching, or it might be, you know, training house church leaders. So it just depends on who you are and where you're called and things like that.
So what your gift is, what your talents are. Yeah, well, that makes sense. No, I thought I would throw this in, Christy. I happened to hear, I believe it was on the news on one of those health watch things or something last night. They were talking about people who are able to speak in two different languages, and you had mentioned studying Mandarin. Of course, I studied Latin for 6 years and can't remember a word of it. But anyway, they mentioned that people who are able to speak two different languages have a much more rapid and complete recovery from a stroke than people who can't.
Oh.
Isn't that interesting?
Interesting. That is
interesting. Yeah, I thought, wow, maybe I better get busy and start learning. My husband is my husband is Mexican and he speaks fluent Spanish. I said,
oh,
he'll
fabulous.
Be in good shape. I don't know about me.
That's wonderful.
Maybe I ought to start learning something from him after all these years.
Yeah, you got a built-in teacher right there. That's great.
Yeah, I know. I still haven't picked it up after all this time, though. Christy, I wanted to ask you, what you had mentioned your music and drama on your website, and you also mentioned it here on the show. What interest did you have in that? Did you play musical goodness, I can't talk today. Did you play musical instruments or sing or perform, or were you the director of the plays? Or tell us what you did in that area.
Yeah, I've done a lot of different things. I love music and drama, just the arts in general, you know, writing, of course. So I grew up, you know, going to choir and stuff like that. I took piano lessons from, I think, 3rd to 8th grade. So I don't play as well as I wish I would, wish I could. I wish I kind of studied it longer. But once I got into high school, I then started getting into musicals and dramas. I got to star in a few of them at school, at our high school. And so I got busy with that and, you know, youth group and stuff on top of school and everything. So, and then I taught music and drama just for a year after I came back from China and seminary. At a Christian school near where we live now, actually. And so I directed 2 plays, 2 musicals. That was a lot of fun. A lot of the parents helped with things. I was on the worship team at various churches. At our last church, the Chinese church that we were at for almost 6 years, I was one of the worship leaders. I do special music sometimes at our current church, and I'm on the worship team and have done that at various other places. In China, actually, I got to learn, one of my students helped teach me some Chinese pop songs, so that was really fun. Sometimes it was like planned. Like we had a team that I took a team of Americans out to teach English on one of those 4 trips. And there was 2,000 students that came to that school, the auditorium, and we ended up putting on a show for them. So I sang a song and stuff like that. But other times, like I would just, when I lived there, I would just be going to the store or something. I came out one time and they had like a, they were doing some advertisement for like shampoo or something on this stage outside this like Walmart basically kind of place. And they were like, they came over to me and they're like, you know, hey, American. There wasn't that many Americans in our school, in our city where we lived. So it was pretty obvious. We kind of stood out. So they were like, hey, why don't you come do a dance for us up on the stage? And I'm like, yeah, no, I don't really dance that well. And then my student was like, she can sing. So I got up and did like a Chinese pop song randomly for this like ad event. It was so crazy. And just, there was all kinds of, you know, funny things. I ended up going with, on this trip with some people, most of whom couldn't speak English, but it was like a foreign affairs officer from my school and like the Nanchung TV channel owner or something. And we just went on this trip and they kind of made me the entertainment for the trip. Like they had me doing karaoke everywhere. So that was pretty funny. But anyway, fun times, fun adventures.
So you did all these fun things. You went to China and you were involved in drama and music and all this. But then you decided to pursue writing seriously. Did you just sit down one day and say, hey, I'm going to write a novel? Or did you have to take some steps to get from point A to point B?
Yes, I actually, you know, as I said, I had always kind of in the back of my head, you know, thought about writing a novel, but God had led me on all these other adventures first, and so I was kind of like off the radar for a while. But after I got married, I started, I had this story idea that kind of came to me as I was pondering some things about my marriage and just different things that maybe I'll tell you more about later. And so I had this story idea, but I wasn't sure what to do with it next. I was working full-time at the church, and then I was also doing youth ministry and worship ministry, but I heard about this ad. I was listening to on Moody Radio, and Lynn Johnson and I think it was Jane Rubietta got on. They were the directors of the Right to Publish conference, which is at Wheaton College, which wasn't far from me, and they were like, has God called you to write a story? They're like, has God called you to write,
yes,
you know, come to this conference? And I'm like, oh, yes. So I went to that conference. That was in 2009. So I went to that conference. And so from then, from that time until I actually held my published book, you know, I went to a lot of writing conferences. I joined critique groups. I ended up becoming the president of one of the Word Weavers chapters. I read a lot of books. I took a lot of classes. Well, took a few classes. I listened to a lot of webinars and then just worked on my book, you know. And I did have 2 kids during that time. So I kind of would take off. Well, so the first child that was born, I took a few months off a little bit. But second one, the deadline for the contest was, so I kind of had to keep going. But, But yeah, so it was 6 years from the time I went to my first conference until I held my book in my hand. And I wasn't working on it nonstop that whole time, but was, you know, off and on most of that 6 years. I was either working on, you know, writing it or revising it, working with editors, writing discussion questions for the book once it was under contract, things like that. But yeah, it took a long time to, I don't know if this is still the case, but I heard on average to write, revise, and get your first novel published, it takes 10 years. And some it's less, some it's more, but it's a learning curve to learn everything you need to learn, not only about fiction, about writing, but writing book-length fiction, and then to get, you know, to improve your craft and your book before it's noticed and actually, you know, wins a contest or, you know, gets a contract from a publisher or whatever it may be. It takes a while. And we're always still learning. We have so much more to learn. But
We though? Yeah, and that's my downfall. I can't turn off that internal editor. And every time I hear something new, I'll go back through what I have written and revise.
Yeah.
So I never get to the end. And I think I went to my first conference with Marlene, I want to say clear back in 2001.
Oh,
and here
nice.
It's 2016, and I don't have a lot to show for.
So
proud of you,
cool.
And I always champion
Thank
people
you.
Who actually have a book out there, because it takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of perseverance, but it also takes a lot of, what is the word? Just for me, my biggest problem is procrastination, that and that internal editor. But we're not talking about me, and I just wanted to congratulate you, because I finished your book last night. I bought the Kindle version, about a week ago, so
awesome.
I was really rushing to get it read before the show. And, of course, I have 50 other things to read at the same time. I've got so many books around here that it's absolutely crazy. But it's nice to have that on my little Kindle app on my phone, because I can read it anywhere. I don't have a Kindle. I just use the little app. So I can read it anywhere. And, you know, standing in line at the pharmacy, here I am reading your book. So. But I enjoyed it so much. And we're definitely going to talk about your book. In fact, why don't you now, with about 4 minutes before our break, tell us about Snow Out of Season.
Yeah, well, the very short version is that it's about two pregnant women separated by time who each face a decision that could change both the future and the past. Forever. That's a little one sentence version I give people.
that's your elevator.
At least
speech,
not in public. Right, that's my elevator pitch. But yeah, basically it's about, you know, these two women who are, you know, it's about two women who are both facing crisis pregnancies, and they're basically asking the question, well, a few questions. Is the child, you know, each carries worthy of life? What will it cost to keep the child, and what will happen if each decides not to? And it starts off fairly normal, like a normal kind of women's fiction book, but then it gets more suspenseful and almost like It's a Wonderful Life or a Christmas Carol thing.
Exactly. And let me tell you what, you really threw me with that for a while.
What's going on?
What kind of medical condition? Here I am. I have a background in nursing for like 40 years and psych nursing to boot. And I'm thinking, okay, what kind of condition does this one have that all these things are happening? I don't want to give away too much of the book, but you really did a great job. You really did a great job with that, Christy. I enjoyed reading that book. And you brought up some, we'll talk about this in a few minutes after the break, you brought up some really intense questions. So what inspired the idea for Snow Out of Season? I love that title, too.
Thank you. It took a while to get it. I actually originally was going to call it Snow Like White Ashes, because that was taken from a line in the book. But Gary Jenkins, he read my first chapter, and he was like, you know, why say white? You know, because snow is already white. But I was like, well, but ashes are black, you know. So, so I was going to change it to Snow Like Ashes, but it ended up that there was another book coming out that year. This was like a couple years ago that had that same title, Snow Like Ashes. It was a young adult fantasy series or something like that. And I was like, okay, so let me change it. So I actually like this title better, and it fits the book really well, I think. just how snow is used symbolically and everything like that. Should I answer the other question now? We have time. Okay.
Let's go ahead and answer the next question. Yeah. Go ahead and say what you were going to say.
Yeah. So basically, I had, for years as a single, whether I was, in China or teaching music and drama or working at a church, I had amazing years of singleness that, I look back on fondly, but I really wanted to get married. And I would read all these books like Passion and Purity by Elizabeth Elliot and When Dreams Come True by Eric and Leslie Ludy. And I really, I had dated a few guys and, some of them, wasn't the best situation. And so I just asked God to pick my husband. I was like, you know me better than anybody else, and you know every other person on this earth, and you know who would be the best person for me and what you're calling me to. And so, I prayed and I hoped, and finally, me and Mark, who I'd actually known for years in ministry at the church that I was serving at the time, we ended up getting married, and, it's been wonderful. He compliments me perfectly, and we're very different in some ways, so there's conflict, but it's not anything, it's good. We have a really good marriage, and I love him a lot. And thinking about the situation when my mother-in-law was pregnant with him, and she had just her circumstances would have led so many women to have an abortion. I won't go into everything, but basically, I started wondering, what if she made a different choice? What would my life look like? And so that's kind of, without giving too much away, that's kind of how I came up with the idea of these, two women facing crisis pregnancies and struggling with the questions about, what's it going to cost to keep this child? What will happen if I don't, if they don't? So that's how the story was born.
Well, you very much bring up that theme, Christy, of the road less traveled and what would happen if I could go back, travel that road that I didn't take the first time. Yeah, and with that, we're going to go ahead and go to our break. For our listeners, we will be on break. We have a couple of commercials to run, and we will be on break for, a little over 3 minutes here. I think our commercials run, it says 3 hours. I don't think so. 3 minutes and 38 seconds. So for listeners, if you want to go grab a cup of coffee or take a little break from wherever you're listening or whatever, feel free to do so, and we will be back momentarily.
Are you fighting what seems to be a never-ending battle to take off excess pounds? Have you tried diet after diet, resolved to banish the sweets and starches from your life forever, and fervently prayed for willpower? Author Janet K. Brown let God do the fighting for her, and she won with a 95-pound weight loss that she has maintained for close to 20 years. Now, Janet shares the lessons she learned with her devotional entitled Divine Dining, 365 Devotions to Guide You to Healthier Weight and Abundant Wellness. Allow yourself to be guided through your weight journey with these practical and inspirational daily readings grounded in Scripture, illustrated with many of Janet's own experiences, and reinforced with a short prayer. This toolbox for overeaters combines a 12-step approach with a focus on the need for Christ as the center of your struggle. Janet's passion for diet, fitness, and God's Word holds the hope for you to achieve success as you strive to make choices that will lead to lasting lifestyle changes. Divine Dining, 365 Devotions to Guide You to Healthier Weight and Abundant Wellness by Janet K. Brown is available at Penn L Publishing, Barnes & Noble, and Amazon. Planning a trip to Colorado this year? 80 miles southeast of Pueblo on Highway 50, you'll find the town of Los Animas, where rich early 1900s American history is preserved within the walls of the John W. Rawlings Heritage Center and Museum. Since the opening of the new museum in May of 2012, the Pioneer Historical Society of Bent County is proud of the accomplishments of its all-volunteer team. Exhibits depict life on the plains in the early 1900s through the replication of home and business structures and possessions of such historical figures as John W. and Dorothy Hogue Rawlings, Kit Carson, Ambassador Thompson, and Ken Curtis, who played Festus Hagen on the long-running western Gunsmoke. Artifacts depict the life of the Native American, rancher, and farmer, and showcase tools of such professions as the cobbler, railroad worker, medical professional, and military. The Grand Hall on the second floor includes several quilt exhibits and an independent order of Oddfellows exhibit. The Old Trail Gallery features unique gifts made by local artists and historical publications of the Pioneer Historical Society of Bent County, such as the Bent County Chronicle. The John W. Rawlings Heritage Center and Museum holds a treasure trove of information for any history buff or historical author interested in events that unfolded in southeastern Colorado in the early 1900s. Located at 560 Bent Avenue in Los Animas, the museum is open Tuesday through Saturday, noon to 4 p.m. Cost of admission is $5 for adults, $4 for children, 6 to 12, with free parking available on site. For further information, contact them at 719-456-6066. If you drop by, be sure to tell them Patty Sheen of Step Into the Light sent you. Would you like an ad for your business, new book, or other product broadcast on Step Into the Light? Contact Patty Sheen at patty.sheen@gmail.com. That's patty.sheen@gmail.com. Now it's time to return to our show. Welcome back to Step Into the Light with Patty Sheen. We have our guest today, Christy Brunke, who is the author of a delightful book entitled Snow Out of Season. But not only is it a delightful story, it also has some very intense issues that she has touched on, such as sudden infant death syndrome, pro-life versus pro-choice, marriage, faith. It's just a wonderful book. She did a great job with it. I want to let folks know where Christy can be found. She has a website, which www.christybrunke, and I will spell that for you, ChristyBrunke.com. Her Facebook page is Christy Brunke, and she has a Twitter page, which is at Christy Brunke, and I'm sure she would love to have listeners connect with her. Excuse me, sorry, I'm coughing again. I also want listeners to be aware that on my website, which is Patty Sheen, PattySheene.com, under the Blog Talk Radio tab, you will find a page called Website and Social Media Information. And since you probably won't remember the information I just gave you about Christy, you can go to that website and social media page on my website, and you will find all the information there that I just gave you about how to get in touch with Christy. It may be a few weeks from now, and you'll think, oh, man, sure would like to look up that lady that was on Patty's show that talked about her book and about SIDS and so such, but I can't remember who it was. And you can go to that page, and it'll tell you the date of the show and the name of the person and where to find her. So that's helpful for listeners. Excuse me again. I'm so sorry. I'm coughing. Christy, we were talking about your book, Snow Out of Season, and I'm curious to know, what kind of reception has the book received since its release?
Well, a lot of people have been yelling at me saying that I kept them up all night because they were supposed to go to bed at 9:30. And
that was me last night.
But yeah, a lot of people are really liking it and saying that they were really touched by it and, you know, couldn't put it down or whatever. I mean, you know, some people take longer to read it and that's fine, but you know, a lot of people have been getting it done really quick and so yeah, it's been going well. So yeah, I'm excited to see what God does with it next.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, didn't you win some kind of an award?
Yes. 3 months after my second daughter was born, the deadline for Jerry Jenkins' Operation First Novel Contest was, and so we had to submit our novels for that. And so June 10th, my daughter was born, and I spent, you know, I'd been working on my book, you know, as I said, for years at this point, but I was really trying to get it done in time for this contest. So I took a few weeks, you know, when she was, you know, just born, you know, off. But
sure.
Then I really tried to get back into it. So kind of between, you know, round the clock, you know, nursing and diaper changes, I'm also finish my book. And so I did the best I could. I was like, okay, this, you know, I could make it better if I have more time, but let me just submit it. in September, but then in October, it was at that time it was actually under the Christian Writers Guild, which was Jerry Jenkins, but he owned that, and so it was called the Christian Writers Guild Operation First Novel Contest. So I submitted it in early September. In October, the Christian Writers Guild closed. Jerry decided to close it and start his own sort of, you know, instructional, what he does a lot of things through his website now and webinars and things like that. So anyway, so we didn't know, wait, is this contest still happening? But then he decided to continue it under his own name. And in December of last year, about a year ago, I found out that I was one of the semifinalists. So I was super excited about that. And I went to, they were going to announce the winners at the Writer to Writer Conference in Hershey, Pennsylvania, which was great, by the way. And so I went there. Well, I wanted to go, but I was still nursing my daughter at the time. And so I was like, oh, I can't go. I'll just have to find out, you know, some, you know, through the internet or whatever, if I won, or through a phone call. But my aunt decided to take off work. And then my grandma as well, they both decided they were going to come with me and help take care of my baby so that I could go. And so they, you know, they would bring her to me to feed in between the sessions. And I was able to go to the conference. And while we were there, Jerry Jenkins announced that I had won third place. And so that was really exciting that I got to be there. And then, you know, of course, since then I revised it, the book more and on my own, and then worked with the editor for Mountain View to get, you know, make it even better. And so, sure. And then it came out December, but Library Journal got an early copy and they actually named it the Christian Fiction Debut of the Month for November 2015. So that was super
yes,
exciting.
Yes, that's what
well.
I was thinking about. Yeah. Because I know when I put the post on Facebook about the show today and it came out, and I know it said something about Library Journal. I couldn't remember what it said, but I knew it was something pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah.
And oh, see, Christy, now you've come first full circle. You won a Butterball Turkey for your first short story, now you've got all this recognition for your first novel. So, see, that to me is an indication that you are headed to a wonderful career as a novelist, and that is so exciting.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been an exciting journey.
Will you touch on, as we talked about earlier, you touch on some very emotionally intense and charged issues in Snow Out of Season. A Sudden Infant Death Syndrome is one. Crisis Pregnancy is another.
Yeah.
And I wonder, without getting too personal, is any of this from personal experience of a family member, or did you do all the research that was involved in these situations?
Yeah, it wasn't. I mean, I've had friends and, you know, family who faced some crisis pregnancies, but I've never gone through it myself. And SIDS, I've known people who've lost babies pretty early, not necessarily from SIDS, though. But I did a lot of research, mostly online and some through the library. I read a lot of, online there's like some, I don't know what they're called, forums or not so much blogs, but kind of places where people who have suffered, you know, that, who have had a child that has died really young, come to write and share their experiences. So it was heartbreaking.
Oh my goodness.
I cried so much reading these terrible stories. But I read a lot of stories and articles, just these little journal kind of entries online about, you know, women and husbands and grandparents who've gone through SIDS and suffered from that. And so I read a lot about that. And even, you know, when I was pregnant with both of my girls and when they were newborns, I was afraid that was going to happen. So in that sense, I kind of experienced some of that fear, obviously not anything compared to what people who have actually lost a child. But I read a lot online. As far as crisis pregnancies, yeah, I did a ton of research. And, part of one of the characters is based in the 70s. So I had to kind of research, well, what pregnancy tests would be around then? Or what, you know, abortion methods? What, where would they buy these pregnancy tests? Just little details that you want to be accurate. So I actually got a yearbook from the school that I was basing, York Community High School in Elmhurst. I got a yearbook from 78 and 79, which is when the novel is based, the Leslie storyline, that is. to research that. I found a really interesting things. Like they actually had a smoking area outside where students could go and smoke on their break.
Oh my goodness.
When people read that in my book, they were like, well, people like my husband who wasn't around then and other people, they're like, wait, this, what? How can there be the smoky air? I'm like, no, it's real. Look here. It's in the yearbook.
Oh, that's funny.
But I know. It's just interesting. And just fashion and things like that. I researched a lot. And then with, like, the pregnancy test, I got a magazine from the month that, you know, she took a pregnancy test. I got a magazine to see what was available and, like, research online as well, like how long that would have been available, and kind of got saw the wordings from the ad and the picture, so I can kind of, you know, show all of this from Leslie's experience. So, yeah, I did a lot of research. And plus, I've been pregnant, so I was able to, you know, relate
identify
from personal
with
experience
that. Oh,
about that. But as far as other things, like, you know, one of the women, the present-day woman named Shannon, she discovers that her child has a disability she wasn't prepared for. And so she, you know, is kind of reading about that and how you find out about that in different ways and statistics about that and abortion and, you know, all kinds of things. So I also had cards like, okay, this week in pregnancy, okay, let me see how far along is she this week? Let me see what she would be experiencing as far as emotions or physical nausea or whatever it might be, tiredness. So yeah, I did a ton of research online, read some books.
You did an excellent, excellent job, Christy. You did very well.
Oh, thank you.
I
thank
really
you so
enjoyed
much.
That book. And I'll get a review up on it hopefully today, too. So.
Oh, fabulous.
Oh, yeah. I usually put my reviews in about 4 or 5 different places. So, yeah, I will definitely get that up there within the next day or so.
You
talked about your research and how it really impacted you, and I wonder if maybe on the show I asked my guests to share a dark time, a shadow that has crept across their path and how they found their way back to light, and that may be it for you, the fact that you empathized with so many people in so much emotional pain, or you may have something else that comes to mind.
Yeah, well, you know, of course everybody has different dark areas, different ways, but since we're talking about writing, I would say writing is a very up and down kind of aspiration, especially in the beginning years, because you're just learning and you're realizing how much you don't know when you're first starting out. And so when I first went to that first writing conference, there's a few stories that come to mind, and this is the first one. It's just, I went to this first writing conference, and I just have an idea for this book, and I had maybe had a journal that I started writing some notes about the characters, and that was about it. And I was just so overwhelmed by all of these things about, you know, the publishing industry and so many things you had to learn. It was very exciting and thrilling, but it was also like, oh my goodness, do I, you know, do I deserve to be here? Like, I don't, everyone else, people were pitching editors and pitching, you know, agents, and I didn't even know really what that was about or what that meant. So, but it was so crucial that I went there, because that was the beginning of me learning about all of these things. So, so I wasn't planning to sign up with anyone. I probably should have signed up with a lot of times at these conferences, you can sign up with a few people, like editors or agents or other, you know, writers who are, you know, successful and published or whatever. And so I probably should have signed up to meet with some writers, but at that point I was just kind of like, I don't really know what I'm doing. I didn't really want to, I just kind of wanted to, let me just sit in these classes and learn where I can be incognito. But one of the other girls that I met at the conference, I think it was Sharon Kopp. Anyway, she signed me up to meet with the editor from Bethany House. I'm like, oh my goodness. And so I met with him, and he was very nice, but basically after he finished hearing my idea, he's like, okay, well, it sounds like you have enough for a short story right now. Like,
oh,
okay.
Goodness.
And, you know, at the time he was right. I mean, I was just getting started with a big concept for this book, and I certainly had not fleshed out, you know, what it became. It, you know, it kind of grew over the years. But another time I remember, I think it was, you know, a couple years maybe after that, a few years, I had written part of the book. It was an earlier draft, and submitted it for this contest that they had at the conference. It was also at the Right to Publish conference. And basically the winner, I think, would get their book published or something. And so I submitted the first three chapters. I didn't have the whole book that I could submit, which technically you were supposed to, but they said it was okay if you just submitted the first three chapters and like
first
a proposal.
Three, yeah.
So I submitted what I had, and it went all the way to Pub Board. I was one of the finalists, so that was encouraging. But, you know, they basically said, hey, you know, we felt like, you know, we didn't have enough empathy for your main characters. And so you need a, like, a fantastic story, they said. The editor who got back to me, she's like, it's a fantastic story, but I felt like we didn't have enough empathy for your main character, so you need to go, you know, work on that. So I kind of left that conference a little discouraged. But then it's interesting because I think one of the things you learn as a writer is to take those, you know, critiques you get and to turn them into a strength, you know, if you can, you know.
Yes.
And so it's interesting because when the Library Journal reviewed my book, they said, Brunke definitely weaves Shannon and Leslie's stories to create an astonishing tale with a gratifying ending. The author's skill at crafting sympathetic protagonists and lively, accessible prose helps to make the emotionally intense storyline completely engrossing. And so I felt like, praise God, like, you know, that it went from, hey, we don't have enough empathy to, hey, this is an emotionally intense story. These are really sympathetic protagonists, you know, that she's created. And so I think that's one of the things you need to learn as a writer, you know, for all those aspiring writers out there. You know, take that criticism that you get and say, thank you. You know, thank you for telling me and being honest with me about what's wrong with my book or what's wrong with my story so that I can fix it and make it better, you know. And it's, you know, it's a process. It's a journey. But it's so important. Jerry Jenkins always talks about in his webinars or other things he says at conferences, you need to develop a thick skin so that you can hear the criticism. And if, you know, think about it, you might not change everything because, you know, some people, it's just their opinion or a few people's, and someone else may really like the way you did something. But, you know, you need to take it and think about it. Okay, yeah, they're right. You know, I need to make this character more empathetic, or I need to do this. And let me read about how can I do that. Let me get some books. Let me take some classes. Let me study it. You know, let me think about it more. Mm-hmm. Let me talk it out with people. And then you can grow. That's an area you can grow in. And so we always love to be encouraged, and that's important too, because it's a long journey, especially for a novelist sitting, you know, alone trying to write this long book. But,
sure.
But we also need that criticism when we're, you know, working on a manuscript so that we can make it better and make it all that it's meant to be so that it glorifies God the most and it can change lives.
One of the greatest gifts actually to a writer, as painful as it can be, is to have someone who is going to give you an honest critique.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, oh, your story is wonderful. Well, what can be improved? Oh, I really can't see anything. And you send it into an editor. And they're like, you really sent this to us? You know, why didn't you tell me?
Yeah.
So, no, seriously, I've been in some critique groups, and I very much appreciate when somebody is blatantly honest and says, this stinks. Throw it out.
Yeah. Speaking
as
of critique
to somebody
groups, I mean, you want to get that encouragement, and that's so important. But I just want to give a little shout out to my critique group partners. I'm not meeting with them now because I moved. But I was part of a Word Weavers critique group from 2011 to 2015 when we moved. Christina Cohen was the president of it, and then I became the president of that one. And then I was also part of another group called Chicago Christian Writers. And both of those groups were just so influential in helping make this book what it needed to be, you know, both encouraging me to keep going in this journey, you know, because we met, you know, monthly or twice a month, depending on the group. But also, you know, coming up with great suggestions and just giving me their, everybody who comes to the group has different strengths and weaknesses. And so bringing those to the table, bringing your strengths and being able to help me to see, okay, this person's really good at tightening my writing, or this person's really good at helping me to scene set better, or this person's really good at like the big idea and helping me to, you know, learn little things about how to develop the romance in a story or whatever. This
right.
person's, you know, great at saying, hey, you're using too many questions. Let's cut some of those out, you know, just, so I just really appreciate my critique group members and I'm just so grateful to them, and encourage aspiring writers, if you can, to join a critique group, whether it's Word Weavers or, you know, American Christian Fiction Writers or whatever happens to be in your church, your local church or library or whatever. It's so helpful.
Christy, with time winding down way too fast, we're down to about 8 minutes left in the show. I would like to ask you, what part did your faith play in the creation of your character? Because I can see this story going in a very different direction if you had not written it from a very strong Christian worldview.
Yeah, well, the kind of one of the turning points in the book is when Shannon, Shannon's the one who, you know, she has lost a child from SIDS. She's a modern day character. She's a drama teacher. She's lost her child through SIDS. And then she's like, hey, you know, she has two other kids, but she really doesn't think she can go through this, you know, losing another child to SIDS. So she just kind of wants to be done having children at this point.
Yes.
But she finds out she's pregnant. And then on top of that, she finds out that the child she's carrying may have a disability. And so she's kind of wondering, what future does this child have? How is this going to impact my relationship with my other kids? You know, what about my career? You know, she's going through all of these things. And she eventually calls out when she gets kind of the final verdict from the doctor about what is happening with her child. She says, you know, God, what do you want me to do? And so that kind of puts into place this whole, all these crazy events that occur, which is kind of like It's a Wonderful Life or something like that, where, you know, without giving too much away, but she, you know, basically God is showing her, you know, showing her, taking on her kind of a visual experience or a, you know, an experience that she can feel what she should do as a result. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that As Christians, we know that every life is precious, and even every unborn life is precious. And you never know who that person may become. You know, like my husband, like he, you know, he's an amazing man, and he's a pastor. He's a, you know, youth and young adult pastor now, and he's a great preacher. He's a great friend. He's a great husband, a wonderful father. And I just think, you know, if he had been aborted, you know, so many people would have lost out.
Right. And I loved your analogy in the book between the snowflakes and human beings, that no two are ever alike. And it was like, wow, that was just, that just really struck me. We have, let's see, we're down to about 5 minutes. If you had a teen in your life who was facing an unwanted pregnancy, what do you think you would tell her, Christy, in view of all that you have learned and all that you have, all the emotion you have put into your story?
Well, first, I'd probably give her a copy of my book.
Exactly.
But also, yeah. I would tell her that, you know, that person, the child she's carrying inside of her, is a unique person. There will never be anyone quite like that person who's living inside of her. And you know, it's understandable if maybe because of her age or her financial situation or whatever, her plans, you know, if she might feel like she can't raise this child on her own. But there's so many families out there who are just, they can't have children. You know, they've tried and they really want a child. And so, you know, I understand that going through 9 months of pregnancy, it can be hard. You know, you have to tell your family, you know, maybe your friends and different people, whoever was going to be around you during those 9 months. But what a small sacrifice to make to be able to give a child to someone who really wants one, and to be able to give that child life and a future. So I would encourage her to think about it and to tell her that, you know, that I would be there. You know, we could talk about it. There's so many places, like the Gabriel Network is around here, which helps women facing crisis pregnancies. It can provide housing for them and baby supplies and counseling and support groups. And there's just so many other, you know, organizations that are available. Like, they're not alone. You know, I understand that it's hard. You know, and the women in my book, you know, I show their struggles. I show how difficult it is.
Oh, yes,
not
you do
like
very
easy,
well.
Like, oh, yeah. Thank you. It's not just like, oh, it's easy. Let's just have this baby. No, I understand it's hard. I understand there's challenges you're going to have to face, but it's worth it. It's worth it for this child. And if you choose to give the baby up for adoption, it's worth it for, you know, the parents. And you know, if you choose to raise the child itself, you know, you'll be blessed so much by that child as well. And so many other people, you know, have the opportunity to possibly be blessed by that person. You know, you never know who they're going to be.
Excellent. Well, with just once again, about 4 minutes left to the show, I know you would like to talk about this, Christy, because it is probably something that is very close to your heart. You mentioned it on your website. Tell us about the March for Life 2016 and why the event occurs in winter.
Well, on January 22nd in 1973, I think it was, that's when the Supreme Court legalized abortion through the Roe versus Wade case. And so that's why they choose every year, starting in 1974, I believe, they started doing this March for Life in D.C. It's a very peaceful march, and they have a rally beforehand where they have speakers from Focus on the Family and such. And basically, they march to their goal is to overturn that decision and to make abortion illegal for the purpose of, you know, saving lives. I saw a pie graph the other day that was just so disturbing. It was all the Americans who've been killed in various wars that this country has had, and the amount on the pie graph was so small compared to the number of American children who've been killed through abortion.
Yes.
And, and I understand women are, you know, some women it might be, you know, oh, it's just not convenient right now, but some women are really struggling. They're a teenager, or they're, you know, this child is, you know, is going to have some disabilities or whatever it might be, but, you know, it's still a life. It's still a precious life. And, and so, yeah, there this year, I think, I'm not into sports, but Matt Burke, I think it was, he's the former Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, I'm not into the football either.
Yeah. You can look at my website. No, but Focus on the Family, the president of that is going to be speaking. There's going to be a Christian music artist, a poet, Silent No More. It's an organization that has former, you know, people who did have an abortion, were thinking about it, or, you know, were almost aborted. You know, they're going to have someone speaking from that organization. So it's in D.C. This Friday. I think the rally's at noon and the march is at 1, from 1 to around 3. And then after that, they encourage people to go and talk to their representatives, their state representatives, to see if, you know, what they can do to bring a culture of life back to this country.
And other than that, other than talking to your representative, Christy, is there a way that someone like me who lives out here in Colorado and can't fly back to D.C. to participate, is there some way that I could become involved on some level?
Yeah, they, you know, you could go to marchforlife.org, and there's places you can donate. There's places you can sign up to pray on January 22nd. They're trying to get people to fill prayer slots all throughout the day. You can also, you know, be part of the conversation using the hashtag, what is it? Why We March is the hashtag, Why We March.
Oh, on Twitter, okay.
So on Facebook and Twitter, you could post about it. You could give a copy of my book to somebody if you want to support the pro-life cause. But yeah, there's a lot of different ways you can, you know, you can support it through prayer, donating, and posting about it on Facebook. So even if you cannot travel there.
Very good. Well, I unfortunately can't donate my copy of your book because it's on my Kindle. And that's the only bad thing about Kindles that I could never share it with anyone. But I used to be on our library board, and I will definitely tell our librarian to order it. And if she can't, I will get a copy, a hardback, you know what I mean,
print copy,
and get it donated to the library, because I think it is, I would love to see every teen in America read it, to be honest, because it really, really goes in depth as to the what a person is facing, especially at that young age when they're scared of death and they have other plans for their life. And you did just an excellent job of that, Christy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Patty.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being here on the show today with us. Christy, you did a wonderful job. It was so good to talk with you.
It's great being here.
And I know
you, so much.
You still have those two little ones. How old are they now?
They are 4 and 1.
Yeah, well, it amazes me that
and
you could get written with them as young as they are. Oh, my goodness. I can't imagine how you accomplished that, but it is a wonderful feat, let me tell you, and I'm very proud of you. So with that,
well,
I will
so
say goodbye, and you have a blessed week.
Okay, thanks, Patty.
In closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. Don't forget to go to my website, and you will find the information to get to Christy's website on there on the Blog Talk Radio tab and the website and social media page. And we hope to see you back with us next week, next Tuesday at 8 a.m. Mountain Daylight Time. God bless you.